You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hey, I'm Brett.
And I'm Steven.
And we are
the Broadway Husbands.
And we are coming at you with a special episode to wrap up 2020. What a year it has been.
Crazy year, but we wanted to give you some of our favorite moments with our favorite guests from this past year to bring you joy.
We hope that you and your family are safe this holiday season. We cannot wait to come back to you with new episodes, new guests in 2021. As always, please come find us on Instagram at Broadway Husbands. And if you can, share an episode or two of your favorite. And this episode, today, you're going to actually hear clips from some of our guests, some of our favorite guests that we've had over the last year that we think will help inspire you, give you a dose of love and joy, and send you off to finish this year in a really happy and loving place.
And remember
to love who you love
and love what you do.
First up is our interview with Chris Rice and Clay Thompson.
It's usually Halloween because, like he said before, my birthday's on Halloween. So every birthday party as a kid was always like crazy Halloween themed, and we like went trick or treating. So now I'm like over dressing up, but he never dressed up as a kid. So now he always loves dressing up. So we like meet in the middle ground and do like a Disney bound when we go to Disney. So that's kind of like our way of dressing up and not dressing up at the same time.
Yeah. We love a Disney bound. It changes the whole experience, I think.
Yeah. We've done Buzz and Woody. Mm-hmm.
That was probably my favorite, I
think. Yeah.
We did Winnie the Pooh and Tigger.
We both were Mickey Mouse ones.
Yeah. It's been fun.
Yeah.
We love it.
Did you get the...
I have kind of a serious question that came up, because you were talking, Chris, about growing up religious, and how has that affected your relationship, if at all, in your... You know, coming out, and I mean, this is the first person you really have been with as a gay man, and now this is the same person you're married to. Has there been a lot of like coming to terms with your religious background and accepting a new way of life, or have you had to like, and especially with your family, has there ever been any complications with that and in your evolution as a relationship?
Clay's giving a big head.
Yes.
Yeah, that's such a layered question, and there's so many different avenues I could go down to kind of go into this. But I will say, yes, there's been personal things I had to work out and work through. And one thing was, I thought at one point in my life, in my very limited view, that I would not be a man if I, you know, was with another man or felt romantic feelings for another man. I thought that I was would be unhappy and would be filled with shame and all these things that I was taught for my life up until that point. And to find out that none of those were true was a really big eye-opening thing for me, that I felt more like a man. I felt more more happy, less shameful being out in the open. It was such a gift, and it took me years and years to work through that. I came out at like 23 or 24, so it was a lot to work through personally. And the family, they're coming around. It's taken them a long time. Coming out was really hard and really did not go well, and it went exactly how I thought it would. My family has reacted how I thought they would, kind of nonstop through. I've kind of had them pegged. But a lot of things have progressed, and my parents and several of my siblings came to the wedding, and that was great. And those who didn't, I'm sad they missed out, and that's on them. And also, I had that pegged too. So, you know, sometimes you just, not that I don't know, I was hopeful that I'd be wrong, but, you know, sometimes you know, people, you expect the best from them, and up to them to deliver, I guess.
Well, so what's the key to you making the relationship work when there's this side of your family that, you know, because I know for me, I had a similar experience growing up in the South where, you know, it felt very important to have my family accept me. But then at some point you have to decide, do I want them to accept me or do I want to be happy? Right. And so what's the key to like coming to terms with yourself and letting go of that part of your identity, your family?
Well, I think initially seeing Clay as a supportive family, like they are supportive through and through. They love him for who he is and they don't want him to change. They're so loving and so amazing in so many ways. So I saw that it was possible. So that was eye-opening and wonderful for me. And also for me to experience that support and love from them has been great. I think another thing that a friend, what we say a lot in the LGBTQ community is that, you know, your family is, your chosen family is your family. The people that check in on you, you know, that's your family. The people that love you no matter what, that's your family. And for a while, I really was resistant to that idea. But one day it just kind of clicked. I think maybe around the engagement, whenever my family was dealing with that the way they wanted to deal with it. And I was kind of just like, screw it. I love my family no matter what. And if they're going to love me, they're going to love me. If they're going to support me, they're going to support me. But I have a wonderful, amazing support system in my life. And we both do, Clay and I, as a unit do. And we're so lucky to have that, first of all. And second, we don't need someone to approve us just because we're related to them by blood. And just because my whole extended family is really close and have family reunions once or twice a year for weeks at a time. They're very, very close. And just because a lot of them don't approve of Clay's saying, no, that's not for him.
I'm doing all these things quietly so that this is for us.
Well, they're okay. But you know, my relationship looks different than theirs and people have the option to accept it. And when it came time to invite people to our wedding, my rule for my family was if they didn't say congratulations when we got engaged, they didn't get an invite. It was a very short list. Because my younger brother got engaged a week after us, and a week and a half after us, and those congratulatory messages all over social media were flooding in for him, and everyone was just silent on my end. So I was like, okay, well, I'm no worse off. I have the same support system I did before, and now we just kind of know who supports and who doesn't.
Well, where does just my last question around this topic, because I think it's good for people to hear, you know, that where is religion in your life now? Are you able to find, I mean, I'm sure there's a huge difference between spirituality and religion, of course, but have you found like a peace with that part of your growing up?
Sure. I think initially, yes. Right off, like, as I said, kind of like coming into my own, I was kind of more at peace with myself and, you know, my religion. I think through the Trump administration and through everything happening in the world right now, it's been really eye-opening to people that I once looked up to for their wisdom in with religion and Christianity, and I've lost a lot of faith in them and what they believe. I do believe in God, and I think I'm still figuring out the ins and outs of what that means in my life and our life. Because I just still consider myself a Christian, but it's just, I know that it's so far from the views of many that are very vocal with their views. I believe in inclusivity, and I don't believe in bigotry, and I do believe in science. And there are things that, you know, if I were to say I agree with this certain religion, I feel like that really, I'd have to be really, really specific with my points in there, because there's a lot of practices that I don't, you know, agree with these days.
We found a really awesome church, if you're ever looking to go to church in the city, called Middle Collegiate Church down by us in the East Village, and it's open and affirming, and that's been so helpful for us in the last few years, just to be able to have that, you know, just to go back to our faith and have that's that great in our lives. But I mean, but it's tricky because, you know, we have a conversation with my parents, we're like, we're going to church, and in their head that means we're going to this, and I'm like, no, they're actually like protesting, you know, Trump, you know, at the church.
And here's a clip from Adam Heinemann and Bradley Gibson.
Did it feel right because it felt like this was like an easier relationship than you had ever been in before? Was that because you were being a little bit more honest with each other,
like, right from the get-go?
Yeah, what was different? What made it feel
What allowed so me good. To be pretty all in quickly was that I had experienced some other serious relationships before, and I had made, you know, my non-negotiables of like how to step into vulnerability and how to share. And like I said, I'm pretty direct. So I saw the opportunity to just like put myself out there, and he was so willing to step and meet me in all of those places. And I think where he was in the context and timing of his life also brought him to a similar place. And we've grown, of course, like every relationship does, but I think we came to the space together as individuals, like really clear about who we were and what we had to share. So then what we got to share was really exciting.
Yeah, the timing was so right. I think it just all kind of worked out in this beautiful, like open way, right? Mm-hmm. I was in a space where I had been in relationships that weren't good for me. I also been through a time where I was, you know, dating around and figuring out exactly what I want and exactly what I was looking for. And so I was in a space where I was ready for something different and serious and something that I could be myself but also grow with someone. And I found that quickly in him. I was also so inspired by him. I quickly, the first thing that attracted me to Adam was seeing how great of a human he is, how his level of humanity is so high. He was doing a Broadway show. He was volunteering at the Trevor Project. He was doing all these things that were like causing him to like run around New York City every day. He still does that every single day, run around New York City. But doing so much good, right? And always trying to bring his best self to the table. And I knew that that's the kind of person I wanted to spend time with in any way, right? As my boyfriend, as my friend. And yeah.
For me, it was a little bit of a risk or a breaking of a rule myself, because I always told myself not to date within the industry. And I don't know where that started or what kind of preconceived notion that was. But I never allowed myself to really do that. And then when can we,
but speak to that just for 1 second, because I want to, I feel like we all have been told that. So what do you think the fear is around that? That people,
I think that there's considerations around it because we're always working within a small community. So there, of course, if a relationship goes sour or poorly, you could be in a contract with that person down the road. You could be collaborating. They could be with someone else that you know. It kind of gets very insular and concentric in that way. So sometimes you want to prevent that, but I think if you're coming at it with integrity and respect for people, then it's just like anything else. And then the amazing benefits that we have received in our partnership from having a similar pursuit, having understanding of like what it takes to be an artist in this crazy city. There's a lot of synergy between being actors and performers of color, being of the same kind of generation and having some similarities in our background and families that really parallel the artistic, you know, similarities as well. So
What since you are both in the same business, do you guys often go in for the same roles, or how does that affect your relationship, if it does or if it doesn't? I don't know if it does or doesn't.
I think it's something to negotiate.
I think that you kind of have to be really honest with yourself. I think this about our relationship, but also about your friendships in the industry too. You know, we're all out here trying to get the jobs and, you know, make careers and climb the ladder, and we all want to be working. We all want to do our best.
This next clip is from our interview with Alexandra Billings and her wife, Chrisanne Blankenship.
We no longer have to say first transgender, first black person, first Asian, first, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That we no longer have to say or highlight that And it's not a color blindness. I'm not suggesting color blindness. What I'm suggesting is the family of humanity. Whether you like it or not, my Southern brethren, we come out of the Rift Valley in Africa. And we have one set, or we have a couple of sets of DNA in us, all of us. And that's what people are taking to the streets for. And it basically, it's every time people take to the streets is to say, it's ridiculous to be marginalized. And I will no longer do it because you, the white power hierarchy, you're no different. You'd like to think you are, but you are not. If I cut my chest open, and my very dear friend Michael cuts his chest open, believe me, the color of the blood is going to be the same. Mm-hmm. So are the arrangements of the internal organs. So is the weight of the brain. It's almost like gender as well. It's so ridiculous mm-hmm. that you have to find that white people, myself, have to find a way to differentiate ourselves. There is no difference, folks. There's just none. There's no difference. Go listen. The world is being destroyed around us. We, by 2035, we're going to be in a heck of a way with our climate, with the destruction that's going on to species, to ourselves. We're going to be in a heck of a way. So enough with the crap. Yeah. Enough with the crap. Let's really focus as a family mm-hmm. on our home.
Amen.
Yeah.
Well said.
This is beautiful.
What a blessing you both are to our lives this year. Thank you for that.
Thank you for giving us this platform and inviting us in.
Yeah. So, okay, we're going to change gears a little bit. I know you both work together on projects. You have a production company. Yes.
You're Schmangy writing a music. Incorporated.
Schmangy?
Schmangy.
Correct.
Schmangy.
Schmangy. It's spelled Schmangy. S-C-H-M-E-N-G-I-E. It has a C in it.
And it's encompassing. It encompasses. It's an encompassing word. Compass. We're all together in it.
I love that. Schmangy. So what is it like for you to work together on projects? How do you...
Oh, my God. I hate it.
Horrible. Really. Oh, it's like the worst. Have you ever had your fingernails pulled out one by one?
Like my finger in a light socket constantly.
Bad. Or circumcision. Wow. It's a lot like circumcision.
Well, I wouldn't know. No, you would not. I would not know that.
You would not know that.
No, I'm sorry. I'm not sorry.
I wouldn't be sorry. I would not be sorry.
It's like the best thing in the world. It's like, I think, when it's like the best thing in the world. It's also like the worst thing in the world. We both have egos.
I don't.
No, both have egos. Pressing on, the lucky thing, or the divine thing, or whatever you want to call it, is that we agree what the need is. We agree that marginalized, otherized communities are the stories that we want to tell.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater,
Suf's creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. Suf's The Original New Musical from Shayna Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
And here's a fun clip from our interview with the Shufords.
And you had a roommate?
Oh, no.
You lived by yourself?
Yeah. Okay. I didn't have a TV. I read books.
Yeah. You had a roommate?
I had an apartment by myself in this complex, and then I moved in with this other guy to cut the rent, which was a big mistake. But anyway, I did that. But I think I was living with him in that apartment at the time.
When you found the house?
Yeah.
So when you found this
house? No, we were living together when we found the house.
Oh, so when did you move in together?
I don't know, probably about 3 or 4 weeks after we met.
Why so soon?
He wanted to get out of that apartment.
Oh, because the roommate situation.
And he didn't want to be commuting between the two, because it was kind of out in the suburbs, and I was down in the Garden District, close to his work.
I like the Garden District too.
Well, yeah, she does have good taste.
Of course.
So now you're living together. Do you remember who said I love you first? Like, was there like a moment where somebody was like, I love you, and then no?
No, it was the business deal.
It was the business deal. Okay.
So
we had already, we already loved each other, and then we had spoken the words.
Right.
But I don't recall how it first came up. Conversation.
I just want to go back a second. So you've known each other 3 weeks and you move in?
It was about that long, 3 or 4 weeks.
He talked me into it. Okay. What did he have to say that got you convinced?
Cheaper.
She didn't have any money. So I didn't have much more. But even then, when I was making that, I put $50 a month in savings of my paycheck. I'm always proud of that.
So you convinced, it's just convenience, it's cheaper. We're spending all this time together anyway, 3 weeks in. We might as well just my rent, I don't want to renew my lease next month. I'll just move in with you.
Right. I think it was 2 weeks.
Wow.
It was pretty quick.
Yeah. Okay. So how long were you living together before you were let's get a house?
Let's see. July to December.
You guys were quick.
Yeah.
So you were like, let's get a house.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no moment between that and saying, let's get married. Let's get a house first.
No.
So that was no proposal. No. The house was first.
We were sitting in my apartment. I was on the couch. He was sitting across in a chair. And there was a window behind him. And he said that he wanted to buy this house. And would we, pool our money and go in and buy this house? And I said, no. I said, what's wrong with living the way we are? We're happy just like this. And he started on, he's a very good salesman. And he said that we had enough money to buy one, and he was just giving, scenario of how much better it would be. You wouldn't have to climb up the stairs, blah, blah, blah. And he had found one. And I said, I like it just the way it is.
If you missed our episode with Stephen's parents, check out this clip from our interview with the Hannahs.
And that was the first time we met. It was September of 67.
Wow.
And it took me from September to December to get him to ask me out. I worked on it.
Okay, so were you just trying to like talk to him or drop hints or like how were you trying to do that?
I tried to talk to him and acting like I was lost. We had to deliver something. He was going the same direction. I said, can you help me find wherever it was we were going?
Do you remember this?
She set me up.
Do you remember that, Dad?
Yeah, but I didn't realize she was setting me up.
Go ahead.
So that's why I do things like that. We'd be sitting down and so if we had a break, I'd go over and start talking to him.
Yeah. Do you remember like what kind of conversations you had at that time? If like just small talk?
Just small talk. Yeah. Where'd you go to school? And you know, right. Is there somebody in your life? Uh-huh. You know, brothers and sisters. Just a normal conversation. Okay. What do you like to do? That sort of thing.
What did he say what did he like to do at that point? When he was 18, what did he say?
Well, at that point, I learned he was a ballet dancer, which I was totally in shock because of myself. He doesn't look like a ballet dancer. My version of ballet dancer, of course, back then was very different.
Right.
Although he was very muscular, in really good shape.
Yeah.
And he informed me how he'd been in D.C. for a couple of years dancing and gotten his driver's license there. And his family life wasn't, his parents weren't real happy at the time, anyhow. So he then come back to Coriolis and graduated from high school. So he was kind of like trying to find himself, figure out what he wanted to do. So he got a job and...
And then how... So he finally asked you out and what happened? So he was like, hey, do you want to go out? What did he say
to you? Yeah, he said, let's go out. It was a Friday night and we decided to go see a movie. It was called Wait Until Dark. It was a scary movie. At that time, the theaters were only in the city of Pittsburgh. You didn't have your theaters like you have in the outskirts.
Right.
So we made arrangements to go out and... I'm waiting and waiting, and he's 45 minutes late, and I thought, he stood me up. So I called a friend, and I said, he never showed up. Let's get ready, and let's go out. Just then, there's a knock at the door. And it was him.
Well, I mean, Coriolis is kind of far from Bethel Far. Yeah.
No, wait a minute. We have to clarify this.
Yeah, go ahead.
The number on the house doesn't correspond with the preceding houses. Okay.
That's very true.
It's like it stopped at like 40 something, and then boom, there's her house, 60.
62. The numbers did not work.
And it was on a curve, and I thought, I don't know if it's this house or not, but I lucked out and knocked on the right door.
Okay.
Is that before cell phones and GPS is even going by my directions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and at the time, well, still to this day, Mom, you're older than Dad.
I'm 2 years and 8 months older than Dad.
So what was, talk a little bit about, like, did you have any hesitation about going out with a younger guy at the time?
Yes, I did. I went home and talked to my mother. I said, I really like this guy at work. He's really cute. And finally asked me out, and I realized he's only 18. And I was 20 at the time. I'm like, what am I supposed to do? My mother said, oh, for heaven's sakes, it's a date. Just go out. You're not going to marry him. I said, you're probably right. So we went out.
Wow. So you go on this first date, and then what happens from there? Like, do you continue seeing each other regularly?
Well, wait. I want to ask Ed.
Oh, gosh.
Were you like, yeah, I scored an older woman. Like, I'm 18, I'm dating a 22-year-old.
No, she's not 22, she's 20.
I didn't really
20, sorry, that. 20.
I didn't think about that.
You didn't?
I just liked her.
Yeah? Did you keep doing backflips just, like, because you knew she liked it?
Well, those hallways were great for that. They were long, and on either side once in a while, these were those really thick Oriental rugs, you know? And it was in a big square.
Right.
And the length of those hallways were probably a couple hundred feet.
Did you ever hurt yourself?
Yes. And you know, that was fun. It passed the time.
I believe it. Okay, so
now you're
dating.
You're dating, and About how long into this dating did one of you say, I love you? And who said, I love you first?
It was probably 4 or 5 months, and I probably said it first. I don't remember. It was probably that I said it first. So.
I can't remember that far back.
And we're going to wrap it up with a fun clip from Broadway favorites, Robin Herder and Clyde Alves.
What were you imagining doing instead? Or were you? Or were you just thinking about being a mom?
It all happened really, really fast. Like, we thought we were going to wait like 10 months to start having a baby. And I walked out of the stage door crying one night and he says, let's go. And I go, really? And he goes, yeah. And I'm like, but what about money? And it was Kelly O'Hara who gave me the best advice ever. She said she was also trying to have a baby, which she did get pregnant in that show as well, her second child. She said, Robin, you're never going to have enough money. It's never going to be the right time. And you're always going to miss out on a job. And if you just keep holding on to those things, you're never going to have a kid. Right. And I was like, you're right. And I just realized that's really what it was. I just needed to have a baby and literally do the most selfless thing I could possibly imagine. And boy, did I. So we were very fortunate. We got pregnant really, really quick. He left to go do On the Town at Barrington. And then I went through the journey of being pregnant, and it was not the most enjoyable. I had gotten a back injury. I tore my L5-S1. And so the weight, he was breached in the way he was sitting. The last 5 months of pregnancy, I couldn't even walk. My sciatic was so bad.
5 months?
It was like I'd get up and I'd fall down screaming because it was so, the pain was so horrible. My back going down my legs. He's a C-section because he was breached because he was very stubborn and he just sat his ass down in my pelvis for literally 4 months. And he was just like, legs up here, head, just in my rib cage. And I just had a C-section, got him out. And then it was just a struggle. Even though I wanted to take a year off to be a full time mom, I did not have the desire to go back to auditioning, even though my agents were like, here, the revival of cabaret. I'm like, I am 175 pounds right now. I have 45 pounds on me. I mean, I can't function right now. Like, I can't show up in a bra and underwear, you know?
You could, but
it would just be lumpy.
For both of you, but how has having a child changed the industry or at least your approach to the industry since then?
That's a big one. Do you want to?
I'll make it quick. Basically, yeah. There were even moments when I just felt, because he was opening up on the town on Broadway when he was, when I was very hormonal dragon lady. I was telling him I resented him. I was jealous. I was angry. I was just like, so my body was not mine. I have this baby on my boob all the time. All he does is snack, snack, snack to this day. All he does is snack. He doesn't eat full meals. And I just felt like I was just, all of my identity was gone. Like, I didn't know who I was. And there are moments where I thought that I'm done. I'm not going back to musical theater. This is it. I'm over. I'm through. But then I needed to be a mom. And then basically at 18 months, that's when I started to come back. And I didn't give a boop about anything. I just walked into auditions and I was like, take it. I was so like thinking about either pumping or thinking about the babysitter or the food or schedules with him that I would just walk in and really not give two Fs. And it changed everything. I mean, I thank Hudson for where I am because I think that's what gave me even more confidence as a female in this business to be like, of course my career is important, but this is my life, mm-hmm. this child and this, you know, we call it our triangle, like this unit, this is what matters. And it gives me that fuel to keep working harder and harder and harder so I can help contribute to making my family's life the best it can possibly be.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing to, it was such like, we were going through polar opposite things, you know, I had like the largest opportunity that I had to date, you know, and she's a very young mother of a couple, you know, a couple month old baby. And she's at home all day with this thing. And I'm like, wasn't like I wasn't working hard either, you know, but I would get home and I'd feel terrible because I would see the look on her face and,
dragon,
you know, and I was living my life, but it, again, not easy because I'd go home and I felt like I needed to help the family.
He was so tired,
but you know, and she would say stuff like, you know, like I resent you. And I was naive enough to be like, oh, come on. No, you don't.
I didn't.
I handled that really well.
It was hormones.
She really did. Like, honestly, I looked into her eyes. She really did lose herself. And to be there with her at that moment and her saying stuff like, because of what has happened to our lives, this child is extremely important. I don't know if I am an actress anymore because I feel like my number one thing is to take care of this baby and to make sure that he has everything. And I said, listen, I see what you're saying, but I'm not going to tell you what you want, but you're an act, like, this is what you do. This is what you love. And there's a season for everything. Right now, the season is, we're here in this situation and I'm lucky enough to be making a good salary in a show that's in the city. And that's getting us through for now. And I said, but things are going to change and you're going to have your time again. Again, like I'm not forced. I want you to do whatever it is that you actually want to do. And if you're saying you're not an actress anymore, then I'll support you. I just don't believe it. And it was amazing to see that transition and to see the steps that she took and slowly, literally kind of like methodically. And then the lights started to come back on when we were doing Kiss Me Kate together at a Shakespeare Theater Company. Like there was a night specifically, was it your birthday?
Yeah. But before that, I have to say the show that I got back into when Hudson was 18 months, it was my first show back. And it was like, the gods came down and gave me the role of Norma Cassidy in Victor Victoria to Gunquit. I would play that role for the rest of my life. It's just like my comfort zone of, you know, being a complete idiot of just this role is so amazingly just dumb and silly. It was a good icebreaker for me coming back into musical theater. Mm-hmm. It was a comfort zone that, you know, she gets to be like a, you know, a sexy floozy, which I know how to do that. I've done it a couple times. but it also, I get to use like, my comedy that I love to do so much. But it was when we were doing Kiss Me Kate at Shakespeare Theater Company. And I have to give a shout out to Alan Paul and Michelle Lynch, who Alan directed it, Michelle choreographed it, and the collaboration with Michelle with staging Always True to You was literally my musical theater role dream come true. I told her I had this vision because I love the like pinup art. I love pinup girls. And I just said, I envision me just in this negligee and all these, it's like pinup poses, like these women coming to life on every man that I'm talking about. And it was everything. And Tom, Dick, or Harry with Clyde and the two other guys, who Con O'Shea Creel and Brandon Bieber, like it just, it was everything I wanted. And that's when it was my birthday. I drank a little bit and I told Clyde, I felt so alive. I said, well, I'm showing the computer, you can't see this, but I told him, I said, I'm getting a tattoo tonight. And so we did, like 3 a.m. I just went in.
It was
the heart. I got a heart on my wrist at like 3 a.m. just to remember to love. Like just, it's love. It's like, this is in my body. And it was, I don't know, that night I was like, I'm going to do this. Like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to keep working hard. And I can do both. I'm going to try to be the best mother. And, you know, every day I say that I stink at one or the other, but it is possible to do both. You just have to work really hard and have a lot of love and passion, which I know that I do.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.